This is Hashtag History, episode 136. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And this week, we're taking a detour from the history content. I recognize that this is a podcast called Hashtag History, where we talk about history's greatest stories of controversy, conspiracy, and corruption. But today, we will be discussing corruption, corruption, and corruption.
Sweet.
Sweet. Yeah. So we knocked out two thirds of what we cover. But that one third, we're going to be real, real heavy on it.
Really heavy.
Real heavy. And honestly, as far as I'm concerned, if the events we are discussing happened even as recently as yesterday, they are technically in the past and are therefore technically history.
I concur.
I appreciate that. So where am I going with all of this? What are we discussing this week? Before I tell you, let me justify my topic selection even further.
I feel like you don't need to do this.
I know. Why do I feel the need? I do this in every area of my life. I'm like, let me justify myself in 14 different ways when okay. Even one was not necessary.
Right.
But here I go. I'm going into my 14th bullet point here. You know, this topic is not really history related. It's mostly just corruption related. But I feel like after nearly 5 years of doing this podcast, I feel like we know our audience. I feel like we know what they love, and
totally.
We know that they love juicy details, whether those juicy details are about historical events or about the latest season of Love is Blind, which
right?
I am watching.
I haven't started it yet, but I'm so excited.
Oh my God.
I heard about the one couple, like
the Megan Fox couple.
Yeah, the Megan Fox couple.
Oh my God. I can't.
Oh my gosh.
I can't. They just met face to face in the episode I just watched.
Oh my God.
Spoilers for anyone. Just if anyone ever says to your face, I think you're amazing, you're wonderful, looks don't matter to me, run.
Lies.
Lies. And also don't say that to someone's face.
Yeah.
Because that's essentially you're calling them ugly.
100%.
Yeah, you're right. 100%. You just called them ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is not a Love is Blind recap podcast,
right.
Though I could do that if I had the time.
Right.
but again, I know our audience. And when I first heard about the topic that we are discussing today, I knew instantly that I wanted to bring it to our listeners, even if it doesn't quite fit the bill for our normal content.
And you know what? If you guys don't like it, you can skip this one. That's okay.
I thought you were going to be a little more aggressive than that. If you don't like it, then you could buzz off. But like, no, please still be here and support us. But
yeah.
Yes, absolutely. That's the beauty of podcasts. Like there's several podcasts I listen to where I'm like, that topic, either I have zero interest or I've consumed so much about that topic already.
Right.
I don't need to hear someone else's take. You are most welcome to do that.
Yeah, but I trust you.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say exactly to our audience is like, trust me here, though.
Okay.
I know what I'm doing here. I know that you're going to love this one.
Yeah.
So this week we will be discussing Mark Weinberger, known as the Nose Doctor. To put it bluntly, Weinberger, a doctor who opened up his own practice in Indiana, was performing hundreds of unnecessary and sometimes negligent sinus procedures on patients.
Oh.
In fact, according to a Vanity Fair article, he recommended surgery to 90% of his patients.
That's insane.
90%. That is an overwhelming number. Many of these patients either did not actually need the surgery or were misdiagnosed with sinus problems when, in fact, they had things like cancer. As medical malpractice and insurance fraud lawsuits began to stack up, Weinberger decided to hop ship and travel to Greece with his third wife to celebrate her 30th birthday. While they're on this vacation, Weinberger disappeared without telling his wife where he was going. She would soon find out that he had left her with more than $6 million in debt. Weinberger would not be found until 5 years later in the European Alps when his girlfriend spotted him on an episode of America's Most Wanted.
Could you imagine?
Oh, no. No.
Like, what if you were watching America's Most Wanted and Alex came on?
even saying that made my heart drop. Even just suggesting it.
Yeah.
Because I can see it would be like Alex with like just a mustache and like really big glasses or something like that.
Yeah.
Despite pleading guilty to 22 counts of healthcare fraud in 2011, Weinberger is now a free man. And you are not even ready to hear what kind of scammy operation he is running now.
Oh, God.
Because scammers are going to scam. They don't know how not to. I'm really looking forward to this episode. I love to talk about scam artists and to condemn them for the harm that they cause innocent and vulnerable people. But before we can do that, we have to, of course, taste this drink that's sitting here in front of us. So shall we?
We shall.
We shall.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And this is Hashtag History,
the podcast for both history nerds and history haters alike,
where we dive into history's greatest stories of controversy, conspiracy, and corruption.
Okay, so Amanda Terrio bought us a cocktail this week, so thank you.
Well, thank you, Amanda. Amanda show. She probably gets that a lot.
I forgot about that show.
Oh, I could never forget about that show. I probably think about it on, this is embarrassing, maybe a weekly basis. I don't know why.
No.
I don't know why. Because like just little, I watched it so much that there's like little social references that like all the time. I think about.
Oh my gosh, I can't even think of like one of the sayings or whatever.
Oh, well, I mean, should we just derail this whole podcast and talk about the Amanda show instead?
Okay, so she left us a message saying, absolutely love y'all's podcast. Aww. Been listening since your second season. Wow.
Bless you.
Apologies.
You are a very patient and understanding person, Amanda.
And she went on to say, can't wait for new episodes. Enjoy this cocktail from a fellow NorCal girl. Yay. From Castro Valley.
Yay! Thank you so much, Amanda.
And then she wonderfully told us how to pronounce her name.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Yeah, because otherwise I would have gotten it wrong.
Yes.
So this one was hard.
Mm.
The thinking of what cocktail to make.
There aren't cocktails that are themed around sinuses or nostrils.
I mean,
or
we could have done like something snot related, I guess.
Oh, God. What, a cocktail that we have to use a spoon to drink.
God. So really all I could think of when I heard Weinberger was wine.
I love this.
Mm-hmm. I also happen to have an abundance of freshly squeezed pomegranate juice in my house right now. So I found a pomegranate sparkling wine cocktail that seemed to fit the bill.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. And I decided to call it the Sparkling Weinberger.
I love it.
It's pretty simple. It's almost like a vodka gran, but it's more like a vodka palm.
Okay.
You rim the glass with sugar. You do a shot of vodka, equal parts pomegranate juice, a touch of lemon juice, and then you just top the whole thing with champagne.
Fabulous. And I have a confession.
Yes.
If you listen to our bonus episode at the start of the season, you heard that neither Leah nor I are drinking right now. Leah
Correct.
Obviously cannot because she is with child. I have not because I am with milk. But I can, like, if I schedule things out correctly. And so my confession is that I did actually put real vodka
champagne?
In my drink.
Oh my God,
not
yeah.
champagne, because I didn't have champagne. Yeah. I did use sparkling cider like you used.
Yeah.
But I did put real vodka in mine.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyone who does want kind of like a mocktail version of this, just change out the champagne for sparkling cider and vodka. I mean, you can get the Ritual faux vodka kind of stuff. So, yeah.
All right. Cheers.
It's just pomegranate juice and apple
it's pomegranate juice. I put a lot of pomegranate juice in mine.
Oh,
so
I put the whole thing that you gave me.
That's why I gave you a ton. Mine basically, yeah, it just tastes like pomegranate juice. This could be dangerous because I don't taste any liquor whatsoever. This is delicious. Thank you. Great
of
idea.
Course.
Weinberger is brilliant.
It does look like wine too, even though it is not red wine.
It does.
It actually looks like red wine.
It does.
Looks like a sangria.
It absolutely tastes exactly like a sangria.
It's very odd, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Unintentional.
It's delicious. Oh, whoops. Rating. My God.
Oh.
Mine's a 9.
9?
Yeah.
Okay.
After you said sangria, I'm like, mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm. 7.5.
That's because it has no booze in it.
Because I'm drinking apple juice, guys.
That's why.
I
feel
it.
Like all of your ratings have been kind of on the low end this season, and perhaps that's the reason why.
Yeah. I've been lying to everyone.
I know. It's like the drink actually wasn't shit. It's just that yours was essentially water. It's why. This water, I'm giving it a 3 out of 10. Yeah, thank you. So before we begin this week's episode, I need to first give credit where credit is due. I first learned about this week's topic from one of my favorite podcasts, Swindled. If you are not already listening to Swindled, you have to get on it. It is such a great podcast, so well produced and so well researched. Even with having 2 new babies and some days not even having the time to brush my hair, I still find the time to listen to every new episode of Swindled that is released. So be sure to check out the podcast and definitely check out the episode about Mark Weinberger. The Swindled episode includes lots of audio from interviews and whatnot that you won't want to miss after you learn all the details of this story.
Ooh, I'll have to go check it out.
Definitely. Also, you all know that we cite all of our sources on our website, but one particular source was so helpful in my research that I wanted to cite it in here in the episode as well. There is a Vanity Fair article written by Buzz Bissinger titled The Runaway Doctor. Between the Swindled episode and the Vanity Fair article, I was able to gather so much information that was so helpful in putting this episode together. So thank you so much to both of those sources.
Shout out.
Okay, now on to the episode. Before we can dive into the scandal, why did I say that? Like, now onto the episode, but again, before we can dive into the episode.
One more caveat.
Yet another preface. Before we can dive into the scandal, I think understanding Mark Weinberger's background will help set some context.
Yeah, I always like, there's always a part of me that's like, oh, I hate like giving these criminals, like letting you know their backstory to try to justify. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it is important to know.
Yeah.
So, you know?
Yeah. And I think the word you used is good, that maybe it's not justification, but it's definitely
somewhat of an explanation.
Definitely. Yeah. An explanation. It's context. It helps you understand why these people end up being the people that they are.
Listen, we could all stand to be a little more empathetic. Okay.
Ooh. Yes.
Yeah.
So let's start there with the background. Weinberger was born on May 22nd, 1963, the second of 3 boys. And he was born to none other than the Chopped Liver family.
Excuse me?
Yeah, as in the Chopped Liver family, because yes, that is actually a thing. You didn't know that?
Explain.
You don't know the Chopped Liver family? Well, neither did I till I did this research. In 1944, Weinberger's grandmother, Sylvia Weinberger, and her husband opened a luncheonette in the Bronx where she served her specialty chopped liver. Customers loved the chopped liver so much that she ended up selling it in local grocery stores, eventually becoming so massive that she was able to develop Mrs. Weinberger's Food Products, a $2 million a year company that mass produced the chopped liver and sold it as a packaged good across the nation.
Wow, people really liked their chopped liver, huh?
This chopped liver business set up Weinberger pretty well, ensuring that he and his 2 brothers were able to attend Ivy League schools. Mark Weinberger would attend the University of Pennsylvania, where he graduated cum laude, before attending UCLA for medical school, where he would graduate with a 3.82 grade point average. In 1996, Weinberger began practicing as an ear and throat surgeon in Merrillville, Indiana. And I looked up the population of Merrillville, and as of 2021, there are only approximately 37,000 residents.
Yeah, I feel like going from, I think University of Pennsylvania is in Philadelphia, I want to say. And then UCLA, obviously, that's in LA. To Merrillville, Indiana?
God, I'm so glad you asked. There is a very, very distinct and particular reason why an affluent, privileged, and money-hungry young doctor would practice in such a small city.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. So thank you for asking, because it is confusing.
Yeah.
To quote the Vanity Fair article I mentioned earlier, quote, "The air quality in the region was poor because of all the steel mills surrounding it. The concentration of airborne pollutants could often lead to sinus problems, which became Weinberger's specialty. The blue-collar population in the area, largely unionized, also had something that is believed to have been essential to Weinberger's plans for his practice, health insurance, of which he accepted any and all kinds."
Of course unquote. He did.
Of course he did. It's the perfect mix of all the things.
Wow.
Fast forward less than 15 years, and 36-year-old Weinberger is at a club called Glow in Chicago, about an hour away from his Indiana practice. While there, he meets 25-year-old college student Michelle Kramer. It's worth noting in the 15 years that we skipped over that Weinberger had been married and divorced twice. Okay, but back to Club Glow. Kramer, a psychology graduate student, was instantly smitten with Weinberger, who promised to treat her like, quote, a princess for the rest of your life, unquote.
Okay.
You didn't like that, I see.
I mean, there's different types of people out there who like different types of things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I would hope so that he would treat her that way, considering the fact that Weinberger was making over $1 million a year at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yes, I am a princess. And give me all the things.
Yes.
While we later find out that he definitely did not keep this promise, his initial actions would lead one to believe he would. The couple was engaged not long after meeting, and the proposal was a whole thing. Weinberger brought Kramer to Piazza Navona in Rome, where he had singers serenade her as she showed up. It sounds pretty nice, the visiting Piazza Navona on someone else's dime part.
Not
the being engaged to this guy part.
Yeah. Or I don't know if I'd like being serenaded either.
So true.
But the piazza. Yeah.
Yes. Whatever comes with it, I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For true. That on someone else's dime.
Right.
Kramer had no idea what she was in for with this marriage. In fact, Kramer was entirely unaware that Weinberger had even been married twice before, something she later found out on television.
Like they got married and everything and she still didn't know?
Oh, yeah. No, she finds out way later with like the America's Most Wanted part.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. She had a rude awakening early on in their relationship, though, when they disagreed about where the wedding should take place. Weinberger, with his affinity for Italy, he was insistent that the wedding take place there in Italy. But Kramer, whose father had recently been diagnosed with lung cancer, insisted that the wedding occur near home in Chicago, where her father would actually be able to walk her down the aisle.
Seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that is a ridiculous request.
Yeah.
While this is eventually what the couple chose to do, Weinberger did not make it easy. He cruelly said to his soon-to-be wife, quote, you can't let dying people change what the living are going to do, unquote.
That's interesting coming from doctor.
Thank you. You were saying anyone should exhibit more empathy. I would think someone in this profession is oozing with empathy.
You should be.
Yeah. Should be.
Yeah.
And I would just say in particular relation to that quote there that he shared with her, a very nice big fuck you. As someone currently going through grief, her passing has changed everything about my life and what I do. So again, fuck you, Mr. Weinberger.
Mm-hmm.
Weinberger was all around entirely unsupportive of Kramer and the grief she was experiencing as her father was in his final days. He would get irritated with Kramer for how much time she spent with her father in the hospital, saying, quote, why does somebody want to be in a hospital room? It doesn't help anything, unquote.
I don't even have a response. I literally, like, why would you ever want to spend the last moments with your father before his passing? Like, why would you ever want that?
Oh, my God. Yeah, and to say, like, it doesn't help anything is so cruel.
Yeah.
It's so cruel. That's time that she can't and won't ever get back. Why wouldn't she, like, I guess I'm stumbling over words too. That's the only place you would want to be.
Yeah.
And actually it does help.
Absolutely.
It doesn't change maybe the course or the trajectory of someone's life.
Yeah.
But it certainly helps with your healing. It certainly helps with you not having regrets later.
Provides closure, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, this guy's a real piece of shit. Am I right?
Yeah.
Multiple trips to Italy do not make up for your partner criticizing and downplaying your grief.
Yeah.
Multiple trips to Italy it was, though, with one of three of their wedding receptions taking place in Ravello.
Okay, Nick Jonas.
Theirs was very classy, I must say, from what I saw in pictures.
Yeah, but he had like three of them.
Yes, he did. In 2002, Weinberger would create what Vanity Fair called a state-of-the-art clinic, complete with a CAT scan machine that had been purchased with a $1 million loan from his father. The interior was marble. The bookends in the waiting room were shaped like noses. I mean, it sounds pretty nice. I know you're laughing.
No, could you imagine sitting in a waiting room with a giant nose statue next to you?
You have a point. I do have a picture of him posing outside his brand new Weinberger sinus clinic for us to look at that I was hoping you could describe.
Oh, fantastic. Let's see. Yep. There it is.
Mm-hmm. There it is.
The guy, like the face on top of the sign, it's just like a very zoomed in look of like the Statue of David. I don't know that it actually is. It's just like, it looks like a classical Greek carving or something, but it's just like zoomed in on mostly just the nose.
It's literally David. Yeah, it's zoomed in so much that like the eyebrows can't be seen, right. And even the bottom lip is almost cut off.
Yeah, which I get it. He's a sinus guy, but like, we get it.
He's really into noses.
Very much so.
Weinberger ramped up his marketing with commercials and billboards and websites, all displaying his toll-free number, 1-800-SINUSES.
That's some good marketing.
Great marketing. That's an easy one to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going back to that CAT scan machine he purchased with the loan from his father, typically you would need to go to your doctor at a hospital that has a CAT scan machine so that they could determine if you did indeed need surgery. And then from there, you would be referred to a surgeon like Weinberger.
So like a level of oversight that otherwise isn't there.
Interesting concept. Oversight. Yes. I think of it like when I needed to have my wisdom teeth removed. It mm-hmm. was my dentist that did the x-rays. And then from there, I was referred to an oral surgeon to have the actual removal operation.
Yes.
It's the same deal here. But because Weinberger had the CAT scan machine on site, there was no oversight by other doctors confirming that any of these surgeries were even necessary.
Yeah.
It's a whole checks and balance system that simply did not exist here.
Yeah. Which for like a trustworthy like doctor who actually has good intentions,
sure.
I could see how that could be great, but clearly we're going to learn that he was not that. So
with the amount of money Weinberger was pulling in with these unnecessary surgeries, Weinberger's lavish lifestyle exploded. He was able to employ a large staff at his giant condo, which included a cleaning crew, a personal trainer, and a massage therapist. According to the Swindled podcast episode, his condo was so large that Weinberger kept a laptop and a cell phone in every room of the house so that he wouldn't have to go on the hunt through his mini mansion each time he needed one.
Okay, like that's ridiculous, but also I lose my cell phone in my own home so much.
Me too.
That I have to ask Google to find my cell phone on a daily basis. So.
Sure. However, of all those options, I think I'm going to take the cleaning crew and the massage therapist over the multiple cell phones.
100%.
100%. If you think that is outrageous, though, wait for this.
Okay.
He also employed chauffeurs that would drive him the hour from Chicago to his clinic in Indiana each morning. And then, according to the Vanity Fair article, turn right back around to get food from his favorite sushi spot in Chicago, then turn back around to deliver it to him in Indiana for lunch.
He is the reason for global warming.
Thank you, Weinberger.
No, but that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. These people are wealthy. Mm-hmm. We're talking private jets and yachts and multiple European vacations and cars and shopping sprees. For his wife, she was given $1,000 a week for a spending allowance.
Sounds great.
I know. That literally would all get blown on Amazon if it were me. During my late night pumping sessions, my God, I get so much stuff off of Amazon.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
Swindled is a true crime podcast about greed. The anonymous host, who refers to himself as a concerned citizen, tells true stories of white-collar criminals, con artists, and corporate evil in a dark and deadpan narrative style that will leave you trusting nothing. There are episodes about the disturbing histories and practices of food giants such as Nestle and Chiquita. There are episodes about man-made environmental disasters such as the Bhopal gas tragedy and the BP oil spill. There's even a Swindled episode about Mother Teresa. Nothing and no one is off limits. Critics have called Swindled remarkable and enraging, horrifying and maddening, meticulously researched and true. For the love of money is the root of all evil. 100 plus episodes are waiting for you. Listen to Swindled at swindled.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, so I think we've done enough background to get a sense of who this guy is.
Yeah.
Let's now get into the actual scandal. And I want to note here that while this is a wild story and crazy scandal about some scammy dude, these are real people that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Real people that lost their livelihood and for some, even their lives as a direct result of Mark Weinberger's negligence, maliciousness, and greed.
Mm-hmm.
One such patient was a William Boyer who went to see Weinberger for breathing problems. During his appointment, Weinberger showed Boyer an image of his sinus cavities, which showed several infected polyps. Get this, though. The image Weinberger showed Boyer was not even of Boyer. It was also noted that during an EKG that was taken prior to the polyp surgery, the EKG showed that Boyer had an irregular heartbeat. There is documentation that Weinberger crossed out the word abnormal on the test results, replaced it with normal, and then treated Boyer with medications that would increase risks associated with having an irregular heartbeat. To no surprise, Boyer was not any better after the surgery than he was before, given the fact that the operation was entirely unnecessary.
And put him at risk for heart issues.
Yeah. 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 I would venture to say not only was he not better, he was worse.
Mm-hmm.
Another patient was a woman named Phyllis Barnes. She was 47 years old when she went to see Weinberger. She had been dealing with an awful cough for months that was causing her to occasionally spit up blood and to even have difficulty breathing. When she went to see Weinberger, he diagnosed her with a sinus problem and performed surgery on her to remove excess polyps. When her condition did not get better, he told her to wait and let the surgery work, that it would just take some time. But things were getting worse and worse. She eventually went to see another ear, nose, and throat surgeon, a Dr. Dennis Han, who immediately upon seeing her, diagnosed her with, get ready for this, throat cancer.
Yeah.
It was determined that Weinberger had not even performed a throat exam on her, nor had he even checked her throat during the CAT scan. He only checked her sinuses.
He really liked the nose.
Yes. In my words, he only checked what he wanted to check so that he could get his money.
Interesting.
Why would he venture further and see like, oh shit, she has cancer. This is something that I cannot handle.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Han stated that the fact that she had a tumor inside her larynx was obvious had Weinberger actually performed the necessary exams. Barnes would end up needing emergency surgery to remove her vocal cords and voice box, which meant that for the rest of her life, she was only able to speak through a hole in her neck.
Oh gosh.
She would pass from cancer in 2004. 3 years after Weinberger had initially misdiagnosed her. She was only 50 years old.
Mm.
One of the most shocking cases that I came across was that of a 9-year-old girl named Kayla Thomas, who went in to see Weinberger for throat issues that she was experiencing. He once again diagnosed her with sinus problems and performed a sinus surgery to remedy that. But of course, we know that that was not Thomas's issue. It was later discovered that Thomas had throat cancer and would later require several operations, including brain surgery, in order to save her life.
And this is a child.
This is a child. And I didn't do further research into this, but they in the Swindled episode, that host mentioned that like sinuses in a 9-year-old girl are not even fully developed to the point where you would be performing surgeries mm-hmm. on someone that young.
Oh my gosh.
Barnes, Boyer, Thomas, and others began to file medical malpractice suits. And this was when Weinberger began toying with the idea of moving to Europe. The fact that that's even something you could do. Me, I'm like, my life is feeling like a lot. Like, maybe we should go to Europe.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that option. Yeah. It's a great option. Maybe we should consider it. Like
for me, it's like I'd love to go to Europe. Maybe we can put that on the 5-year plan. Maybe
10. It's 10. Yeah,
let's shift it to 10 instead. Yeah. For the 5-year plan, we can go to San Francisco.
There we go. Yeah, 2-hour drive. Yeah, more 2-hour realistic. Drive.
His wife, Michelle Kramer, was very aware that he was worried about the litigation, but stated that she supported her husband completely and believed others were just out to get him. I think that's fair. She's only going off of what she's being told.
Yeah, but he's also proven to not be a trustworthy person. So.
Yeah, good point. He did tell her that spending time with her father in his final moments
was a waste of time. Yeah.
It was a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, she didn't know the inner workings of his practice and everyday evil doings. Over the course of the various lawsuits, discovery found that Weinberger would, at times, see more than 100 patients a day.
I don't even like, do you even have time to walk through 100 doors a day? Like,
right. To go crazy. Up and down your hallway 100 times
yeah.
a day. I worked for an attorney for a very, 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 very short period of time. The shortest employment I've ever had because uh-huh. it was miserable. Uh-huh. And while there, he would sometimes have his caseload would be over 100 clients at a time. And I can say from having worked there, it's not possible. It's mm-hmm. not feasible. As one person, you cannot manage that many cases and clients at mm-hmm. once. He was the only doctor at that practice. So in the same vein, it was discovered that the average amount of time Weinberger spent with each patient was, I want you to guess, Leah.
I mean, 20 seconds. Like, I don't know.
You're not too far off. He would spend 3 minutes with each one of these patients.
That's not enough to even
get their name.
Yeah, to get their name accurate. Like,
right. This allowed him to perform hundreds upon hundreds of sinus surgeries, the majority of which were not medically necessary.
You know, this also makes me, obviously they're not the people fully at fault or responsible here, but this also makes me question the people. He had to have had a lot of people working in the office,
sure.
like admin, yeah. nurses, maybe, I don't know. And if to witness this and see what's happening, they are in some ways complicit in my mind too.
Yeah, I agree.
He's claiming to remove polyps that aren't there. I'm yes. sure some nurses had to have seen that.
Exactly. It's like, it's, yeah. It's one of those things. We'll have a future episode this season that kind of dives into blind obedience to authority. Mm-hmm. So maybe that plays into this a bit, but I would think that you wouldn't want to risk your own license.
Yeah.
And stature in the medical industry and community to work for someone like this
yeah.
and to be complicit.
Yeah.
Not only were these surgeries not necessary, Weinberger was also using an outdated method when he performed these procedures. According to Vanity Fair, quote, instead of the accepted method of enlarging the natural sinus openings to improve drainage, he employed an outdated and substandard procedure in which he drilled holes in the back of military sinuses so that mucus drained further back into the sinuses, causing chronic sinusitis that most of his patients never had before they sought his help, unquote.
Yes.
Weinberger was clearly feeling the effects of the litigation looming overhead. Employees of his practice said he began spending more and more time in the back office away from staff. The man who used to arrive each day clean shaven was beginning to show stubble, and to his wife, he continued to talk about ditching it all and moving overseas. In September of 2004, Weinberger took his wife, her hairstylist, okay, and a handful of her friends on a trip to Greece for her 30th birthday. I don't know, I kind of said it like, okay, but If you're this wealthy that she was probably getting her hair done regularly, those ladies become your besties.
Oh, I was just going to say they're probably her friend.
Yeah. And that also happens to be her hairstylist.
Yes, yeah.
When they arrived in Mykonos, they had expected for their yacht to be ready for them, but it was delayed, causing Weinberger to stress. We're going to talk more about that later.
Okay.
The yacht would not arrive until the following day, where the couple went to bed after going out to eat. The following day, Kramer woke up to an empty bed. She has said in recent interviews that she instantly knew something was wrong, and she was right, because she would never see Weinberger again. The yacht captain told Kramer that Weinberger had flown to Paris early that morning to obtain a set of diamonds he had bought her for her birthday, but this wasn't true.
Could you imagine?
For that to be an actual sentence that could be real. It's like, what? My husband just now is an actual saint because he just went to Walmart to buy a smart coffee creamer.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God, thank
yes,
you.
Yes.
Real life here. Kramer knew in her gut that he had up and disappeared. He left her with €1,000, her passport, and the certification for her engagement ring. Oh, wait. He left her with one other thing, $6 million of debt.
Yikes.
When she returned home, borrowing money from an aunt to even afford the return ticket, Kramer began going through Weinberger's records. That's when she discovered that he had made two separate trips to New York, where he had bought nearly $80,000 in diamonds. He had also spent over $1,000 in survival gear, so things like tents, portable showers and sinks, compasses, headlights, water bottles, sleeping bags, and more. If you'll recall just a moment ago, I mentioned that Weinberger had become a nervous wreck when their yacht hadn't docked in Mykonos in time. Mm-hmm. That's because apparently he had sent out survival gear packs in advance of their trip, which was to be picked up by the yacht on the way back to Mykonos. She even found a book that he owned titled How to Be Invisible.
That doesn't sound suspicious at all.
No, I have one of those right here on my shelf here. Certainly, that's not weird at all. Kramer returned to a quiet life, having to file bankruptcy the following year and having their luxurious home repossessed. In her efforts to locate her husband, she appeared on shows like Oprah and Larry King. It wouldn't be until about 2 years after his disappearance that she was granted a divorce. Weinberger's father, who had lent him the $1 million for the CAT scan machine, also had to file for bankruptcy.
He hadn't paid him back by that point?
No. I think because he just lived so lavishly. I mean, why is he buying multiple portable toilets? But seriously, you know, this isn't a guy that when he's given $1 million actually
pays it back. Yeah. God.
As for Weinberger, the world at large did not know what had happened to him. Not long after he disappeared, his medical license was revoked with numerous medical malpractice suits pending. As far as the world knew, he had disappeared off the face of the earth. But then, an episode of America's Most Wanted aired. An Italian woman in her late 30s named Monica Spicogna had met Mark Weinberger, though she didn't know he was Mark Weinberger. He introduced himself as Mark Stern in 2007 at the grocery store that she worked at in Courmayeur. The two of them struck up a relationship. Spicogna was under the impression that he was just one of those super wealthy American guys that had made enough money to be able to peacefully retire in Europe. Weinberger was no longer living the lavish lifestyle he had once been accustomed to. Rather, he was camping out in cold mountains because he wanted to and paying for everything in cash. More like he had stopped paying the rent on his apartment.
Yeah.
The Italian police came after him when he stopped paying rent, and they knew exactly who to look for because the dummy had given his real passport when he rented the apartment.
What?
It's like someone that works so hard.
You literally read a book about how to be invisible.
Didn't the book say don't give your actual documentation?
Right?
That has to have been a whole chapter.
At least an intro, like
at least a footnote. But just because they knew who they were looking for didn't mean that they knew where to look.
Right, he's living in caves now somewhere.
Right. But fortunately for authorities, Spicogna did. Mm. On her 39th birthday, a friend of hers called her, hopefully to wish her happy birthday. My research was not clear on that part, but that's going to be my hope, is that's what initiated the call. But also to tell her that they had seen that Spicogna's boyfriend, Weinberger, was wanted by the FBI. That is when Spicogna discovered the America's Most Wanted episode.
Yeah.
Spicogna called the police and told them exactly where to find him. She told Vanity Fair of this decision, quote, "It had to be done because I was raised to be sincere, because I had a civic duty, because I was also afraid. He could not escape forever, and he should not escape forever," unquote.
Yeah.
Spicogna gave authorities a general idea of where to find Weinberger, because, I mean, can you give a specific location? It's like,
he's by the mound of rocks up on the mountainside. Like, I don't...
there's a tree and a patch of grass on the left side of this entire mountain. I don't know. So she gives them a general idea. And on December 14th, 2009, they conducted a search via snowmobile. He was located in the Elena Refuge region, thousands of feet above sea level, where temperatures were about 4 degrees below zero. Along with Weinberger, they, quote, "discovered not just one campsite, but three. They found cans of food. They found a stove used to melt snow into water. They found changes of clothing. They found various medications, including Viagra."
Necessary.
The necessary needs.
Yeah.
All of it was enough to last somebody for a significant period, unquote. Hmm. He was eventually extradited to the United States, and on October 22nd, 2011, he pled guilty to 22 counts of healthcare fraud for overbilling insurance companies for operations that either were unnecessary or, in some cases, never even performed.
And I'm sure, like, 22, those 22 counts, like, that's, if he was seeing 100 people a day, that's, like, tiny percentage of the actual
instances
where he could have been charged.
For sure. That's on the low end. You know how the legal system works, where someone committed 100 crimes, but we only have absolute stone cold proof of 10 of them.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Some of those charges were for like procedures he wasn't even performing.
Oh,
he would just put people under. This is so scary. He would put people under anesthesia for an allotted period of time, wait it out, and then bill their insurance for the procedure later. Can you even imagine? He was sentenced to 7 years behind bars. Nearly 300 former patients of his filed medical malpractice suits against Weinberger and received a share of $55 million settlement in 2013.
Good.
Weinberger was released to a halfway house in 2014. And as of 2019, he is officially a free man, living it up in West Palm Beach, Florida, with a new wife and two children.
Ugh.
He is also currently attempting to make a name for himself online, calling himself a yoga doc. As NBC News reported, quote, in online videos, he's seen selling yoga classes that will turn a nerd into a ninja or a zero to a superhero. He says people work out for two reasons, get hot chicks and look great naked, unquote.
Does he?
Grifter's gonna grift, right?
Oh my gosh.
I think it's super gross that he can go on living his best life while many of his victims are either no longer here to live theirs, or those that are living it impaired.
Yeah.
For Kayla Thomas, the 9-year-old he operated on, who is now in her late 20s, she said recently, quote, I think it's awful. I think he's still showing and exhibiting the same level of awfulness that he was earlier, which leads me to believe he hasn't learned anything, unquote.
Clearly has not learned a single thing. Clearly.
I could not agree more. Weinberger seems like the type that will never learn anything if it doesn't benefit him and his pocket. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Hashtag History.
We will share the picture that we discussed on the episode to our Instagram, and all sources used to put together the episode can be found on our website at hashtaghistory-pod.com.
Subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you use, share about us with your family and friends, and then give us a rate and review.
And be sure to check us out on Instagram at #history_podcast.
And come join us over on Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can help support our books and booze supply. You also get access to some behind the scenes content, an automatic 15% off all merchandise, and we mail you cards and stickers. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Did I tell you I got a Stanley for Christmas? I can't remember if I told you that.
I don't think you did tell me that, but I can see it takes up half the screen, so I could see it.
Yeah, it's literally stupid. Like, I would never buy one of these for myself, and I totally am on board with people that make fun of them.
Yeah.
But I like it.
It makes you drink water, huh?
It does make me drink water, but not any more than any other water cup would. It's like, I feel like that's the thing that people say is like, get a Stanley, it'll force you to drink water. I'm like, I didn't drink water before or after. I mean, yeah, I'm drinking maybe a touch more than I drank before. It's really not a magical cup, but
no,
I didn't pay for it. So in 2014, Weinberger was released to a halfway house in 2014. And as of 2019,
Okay. You said in 2014 and then in 2014 again in the same sentence.
Did I seriously? Okay, thank you. I'll do the whole. Yeah, you're right. I see that.
Yeah.
Okay.